I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's see if Duff McKagan can make us laugh with the joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling. Yeah, I hope everybody's doing well with you. You know, a friend of mine took his daughter out the other day, and my friend was out, and he saw a really old friend of his. They had seen quite some time, and he introduced his daughter. This is my daughter, Beth, he said to his old friend. The old friend said, oh, what is Beth short for? And my friend said, oh, because she's three. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I like that one. Hey, by the way, so I just heard last Friday's joke of the week. It was a little bit mumbled. I think it was the show with Jay White, Switchblade Jay White. So if you heard the joke and couldn't quite discern it, I'm going to tell it to you right now. He said, yeah, I went to the islands and bought a piece of pie in Jamaica. It was $3. In Bahamas, it was $4. And in the Dominican Republic, it was $5. He goes, these are the pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates. All right. Tip your waiters and waitresses and try the veal. We are here this week. Duff still calling in all the time, every single Friday. He's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. And today we got some possible future Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. 3 Days Grace is here. They were just nominated for 3 Juno Awards, Canada's version of the Grammys. I have a Juno with Devin Townsend when I was Captain Spectacular on the Zoltoid album that we did together. 3 Days Grace are up for the Group of the Year, Juno, Album of the Year, and Rock Album of the Year for their latest record, Outsider. Congrats to them. And they also just recently made rock and roll history by becoming the band with the most number one songs on the active rock charts. That's right. Thanks to their latest single, Infrared. They've now got 14 number one rock songs. They just beat out Van Halen for the most number ones. We're going to talk about that with them as well. I've got the entire band here today. Besides Living Color, I've never had an entire band. Singer Matt Walst is here. His brother and bass player Brad Walst, drummer Neil Sanderson, and guitar player, the big man, Barry Stock. It's only the second time in Talk is Jericho history I've had an entire band on. Like I said, Living Color was the first. 3 Days Grace is the second. All right. So before we get to 3 Days Grace, I got another special guest for you. And if you live in Philadelphia, you've seen the ridiculous, amazing billboards all over town. The ones that say, I hate Steven Singer. You know exactly what they mean. So you know exactly who's on the line with me right now. It's Steven Singer. I don't know if I hate you, man, but I got to tell you, I love these ads, this whole campaign to promote Steven Singer Jewelers. You are the CEO. You are the founder. How did the whole I hate Steven Singer thing get started? Because it's really memorable. It gets stuck in your brain for sure.
Well, thank you so much. First of all, thank you so much for being one of our spokesmen. We love being associated with you, and you already have a big problem.
What's the problem?
I can't even tell you. I have had dozens and dozens and dozens of requests over the last week for signed photos and swag and want to know when they can meet you. Everybody's going crazy. And not just wrestling fans. I'm talking regular fans. Customers are coming to the store. Customers are tweeting us, Instagram, live chat. Everybody wants to be involved with Chris Jericho. I had one of my programmers call from overseas in India, wants to know how he can meet Chris Jericho. This is how excited people are. So I can't thank you enough for us being associated with you.
We'll transit over to I Hate Chris Jericho soon enough.
There you go.
So how did you come up with that idea?
Well, you know, the best stuff is always true. And I was sitting in downstairs. This is many years ago. I was waiting on a customer. It was a guy by himself, and he was buying his wife a ring for their anniversary, their 20th anniversary. And there was a young couple right next to him that just got an engagement ring, and she was over the moon. She was just crazy. She was saying, oh, my God, I love the ring. I love my fiance. I love Steven Singer. I love the store and everything. She's going crazy. And the guy turns around and looks at her with a deadpan look and goes, "You love Steven Singer? I hate Steven Singer." Now she thinks, "Oh my God, this guy must be a mental patient. What the hell's going on?" He goes, "You want to know why?" And she like looks like, "Well, not really. I don't know." But he goes, "I'm going to tell you why. Because 20 years ago, I sat right here and I got my wife an engagement ring. And we had 20 wonderful years of marriage. We had 2 grown kids. Everything was terrific. Everything was great. I came back and got her an anniversary band. And 9 months later, we had our 3rd kid. My kids were done. They were in college, paid for, done. Now I have one that's 2 decades younger than the other kids. I hate Steven Singer. And they blame me for the bottle feedings and that. Meanwhile, he said it was the best thing that ever happened to him years later. But when women hear that story, they always go, ah. But it evolved to all the other jewelers in the country hate me because we kind of expose them because we have a one-price policy, the perfect price. We have algorithms that search online, all over the internet, and actually other stores. And we make sure that we always give everybody the best value.
Which is kind of part of your overall, you know, business plan with so many other kind of, like you said, very memorable things. I want you to tell me a story about the Howard Stern beauty pageant for Tiger Woods' alleged mistresses. You designed an exclusive ring for the winner.
Howard had called me and said, "We're having a Tiger Woods mistress beauty pageant." And he wanted to make something memorable, some kind of thing. And they were having all these, you know, girls came in that he had dated before. And so we made a large black diamond ring that we gave as one of the prizes instead of a regular white diamond. And that was one of the grand prizes for the Tiger Woods beauty pageant, or mistress beauty pageant, I should say. And that was all Howard's idea. He called me and just said, "Would you do it?" And I said, "Sure." And we were in the studio. It was a lot of fun.
Well, one thing that was your idea was your neat, unique, the gold dipped roses. And we're going to give away 12 lucky Talk Is Jericho listeners, these gold dipped roses.
Details
coming
great.
Up later in the show. Yeah, very, very popular. Getting lots of questions. I gave 2 of them actually to my wife. We have them in a vase in our kitchen right now. How did you come up with that idea for these gold dipped roses?
It was just a dopey idea many years ago, around 1980, we came up with it. And the first time we had the gold roses, we showed them to everybody. The funny thing is everybody says these are horrible. I hate them. They're ugly. Nobody wants them. We had them for a couple of years on the shelf. We were selling them. Finally, my staff said to me, "Listen, we got like a couple dozen of these things. They're getting dust on the boxes. Nobody wants them. We got to get rid of them. Let's just, you know, let's give them away or give them to charity," something like that. I said, "No, you guys don't see what I see. It's just going to take a little time." Then the next year we sold maybe 75 of them, and then a couple hundred, then a couple thousand. Then it started to really take off, and now we're the world's biggest seller of this product. We're making them all over. We have exclusive colors that are just ours. And what happened is people, just like you said, they kind of build a bouquet. So they would get one, then the next year, whatever new color we come out, they would get that. And they like to collect all the colors. People give it for Christmas, for birthday, for anniversary. Certainly Valentine's Day is our number one time of year. Mother's Day is very, very popular. But it's really just a great gift. It starts at $59. It comes in a really great gift packaging. It has a little personalized love note from you. And women just dig it because, you know, it says, "I love you all year round." It's an easy gift. And guys like it because for $59, how can you go wrong? If you got, you know, regular flowers, they die in a week. If you get candy, it's great, but goes right to your hips. And, you know, the girls don't like that. So this is something that says, "I love you," and it doesn't break the bank.
Exactly. Like you said, and they never wilt, they never die because they're dipped
in gold. Now, they last forever, yeah. And they have a lifetime guarantee. So even if your dog eats it, something happens to it, we guarantee it.
So I wanted to ask you, sometimes guys get in some rough situations with their wives or girlfriends or significant others, and I want to run by some scenarios by you, Steven, to see if there's a Steven Singer jewelry product that might help a brother out of a jam.
Sure, lay it on me. This is the one area that I may be an expert at.
All right. So let's say you forget your wife or girlfriend's birthday.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Well, if you forgot your wife's or girlfriend's birthday, it would be a miracle, I think, if she forgave you, mm-hmm. because that's a big one. So I would get a pair of miracle diamond studs. We have these little diamond studs. They're called miracle diamond studs. They're under $500. They're $468, something like that. And they're quarter carat. But the great thing is that just like you have a miracle bra, this is called miracle diamond studs. They look way bigger than they are. They look like they're a carat diamond in each ear, which would be, you know, a couple thousand bucks. And for $468, it's just unbelievable look. And that's a great gift if she's going to forgive you for that. But my advice would be, don't do that.
Exactly. There's the first one. How about you stayed out too late with your buddies and came home drunk at 4 a.m?
Oof, man, oh man. These are tough. Wow. Well, if you came home drunk, I would probably get, the gold rose. I think that because you would tell her that you were real sorry and you're going to give her a real gold dip rose and promise to build her a bouquet every year if she forgives you.
Okay, that's good. See, you got them all. Okay, how about you need a piece of jewelry because you don't want to get a puppy or a yappy dog that she's convinced she wants to get a dog?
That's an easy one. We have beautiful gifts called Sweet Love for Pets. And you mentioned Howard Stern earlier. It was named after his wife, loves pets and does a lot with North Shore Animal League. And they call each other Sweet Love. So we have this whole category called Sweet Love for Pets. And we're donating some of the proceeds to the charity. And they have these little puppy charms and little cat charms, $98. They look just like your own dog or your cat. And this way, if you wouldn't get her a dog or a cat, you can say, listen, I'm starting you with this. Here's a nice little dog you can carry with you all the time and have wear.
All right. You're good, man. You're good.
You're giving me some tough ones.
All right. I'm trying. How about, let's see, you're seen kissing another woman on the kiss cam at the NBA or NHL game.
Oh, man. Man, you are tough.
Well, you asked
for
it.
I would use the old Chris Rocks or Eddie Murphy thing. I say, I kissed her, but I love you.
Right.
So I give her a kiss me diamond heart earrings and remind her how much you love her, that you just happened to kiss her. It was an accident. I don't know how.
Okay. How about you called your wife or your girl by someone else's name during Hibbity Dibbity?
Yikes, that's a really, really bad mistake. That calls for diamonds, really, big diamonds. Any type of big diamond, because you're going to have to make her forget. And that's a tough one.
Okay. And this is the last one here. Your girlfriend's best friend, girlfriend's BFF, found your profile on Tinder and showed it to her.
Oof. Well, I would tell her it's an old profile, and it was something that happened before you met her, and then pull out a nice pair of diamond studs. And diamond studs make up for a lot. And, like I was telling you earlier, our diamond studs all have a lifetime guarantee and lifetime upgrade. So you could trade it in any diamond, like whether there's a diamond engagement ring, a diamond stud, a diamond earring. You can trade it in and get exactly what you paid for it. Unlike an iPhone. Let's say you got a new iPhone next year and you spend $700-$800 for it. And now the new one comes out, it's worth $40. Our diamond studs are always worth what you pay for them. And this way you can remind her every year that you love her and forget the old profile.
See, you're not only like one of the world's best jewelers, you're becoming kind of a Dear Abby now.
I'm like a therapist. You kidding me? Listen, there's only a couple of reasons why you buy jewelry. One is because you really want to get with this girl, right?
Right.
And it's a show of affection, a sign of your love. But really, guys buy jewelry because they want to get laid. This is the whole thing, right?
Right.
And if you do it right and you take care of your women and you treat them nice, and I'm teasing obviously a little bit, but, you know, treat them with respect and everything like that, this is a great way to say I love you every day. And you get credit for it all year round, whether it's a $59 rose or a $5,900 diamond ring or anywhere in between.
Well, Stephen, like I said, man, I hate Stephen Singer is the .com is the website. I don't hate Stephen Singer. In fact, I really enjoy working with you. I enjoy reading your ads and answering all the great questions that people are asking about all your cool stuff. So I appreciate you coming on today, and I look forward to working together for a long time.
Oh, me too. And thanks again for doing everything. We're just absolutely delighted to partner with you. Thrilled that you're giving some of the listeners some gold dip roses, and let's keep it going, pal. Congratulations. I'm honored to be with a 6-time world champion, somebody with your following. Man, oh man, it's the greatest. We're honored and thrilled.
All right, Stephen, thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Stephen Singer. And like I mentioned, we're going to give away 12 more of those gold dipped red roses for Valentine's Day. I'll give you the details on how you can score a free Stephen Singer rose coming up later in the show. And if you're not one of the lucky winners, you can order the 24-karat gold-dipped rose at IHateStevenSinger.com. The roses are an amazing Valentine's gift. Your Valentine will love them because they're not going to wilt or die, and you don't need to water them. They'll literally last forever. And the best part is the roses start at just $59, okay? And for that price, you get your own personalized love note, Steven Singer's signature gift box, and free shipping. All right, $59 for all that and free shipping. And the gold-dipped roses come in a bunch of other colors. So now you've got a go-to gift for any special occasion, her birthday, her anniversary, Mother's Day, whatever it may be. You can build her an entire bouquet of gold-dipped roses. We've got two in our house right now. Just go to IHateStevenSinger.com now and order for Valentine's Day. That's IHateStevenSinger.com, spelled just like it sounds, Steven with a V. IHateStevenSinger.com. Steven Singer Jewelers, one place, one price. This is a gift she's going to cherish forever. Go to IHateStevenSinger.com now and make your lover happy. All right, so we've been talking about doing this for a while. It's 3 Days Grace here. And here's something, a little bit of trivia. The entire band is here. And the only other time I had the whole band was Living Color.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow. Yeah. Huh. So it's you guys and Living Color going to the full lineup. That's awesome. Hall of Fame.
We,
yeah,
played with them not too long ago. They
did
were,
you really?
They were awesome.
Where did you play with them?
Oh, yeah. We're Shipwrecked. Yeah, was it? We did Shipwrecked.
Oh, yeah. The guitar player. What's his name?
Vernon.
He's incredible.
Ago, yeah.
Yeah.
They're cool guys. So, yeah, so we have the same vibe. And here's something that I want to bring up right off the bat, which is just blows my mind. The most number ones in rock radio history, 3 Days Grace. Just beating...
Yeah, Van Halen.
Van Halen.
Yeah,
it's a still, little rock band called Van Halen.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal. They still fly private, though, and we fly public.
You fly bus.
Yes. Bus. No, it was pretty surreal. You know, like we don't get too wrapped up in statistics and that, but like that one was pretty special. For us, it just means it's really... it's an homage to the fans and the industry for supporting us on this crazy journey. You know what I mean?
Is it something that you guys had known about? Like, okay, guys, you know, like someone told me that we have 12 and Van Halen has 13. Did you know about this?
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, our radio department kind of got bummed out when the Avenged Sevenfold tour didn't happen.
Right.
M Shadows kind of had to get, he had to get some throat surgery. But that was, so we were just dropping a single and that was the one that ended up breaking the record.
What song was it?
It was Infrared off the new album, but, it was one of those things where we're like, radio department's like, what do you mean you're not going to be on tour for the next 2 months? We're like, no. So Matt and I actually, we went down to, because we had time off, we went down to Africa on like a humanitarian trip.
Right.
So we were down in Africa actually when we heard the news. So it was kind of like, it was like, oh my, we just set this great record. And then you look up and we're looking at mud huts. Just like, it was pretty humbling.
You're making it sound, and we'll get into that, but you're making it sound like you guys went on a radio tour of Africa or something.
No.
Guys, you got to hit the African markets to get that going.
We did play acoustic for many children.
For many children out there. Yeah. Well, let's just talk about that quickly. I mean, you guys just mentioned nonchalantly that you went to Africa to look at mud huts. Like, tell me the story about how that even transpired and what were you doing there?
Well, we have a friend who it works for like a humanitarian organization, and so he goes on a lot of trips and kind of raises awareness, and his job at the company is kind of just to do like musical partnerships with bands and people with an audience and stuff to kind of get word out on some of the challenges that they have down there. And so initially, this tour that we're on right now, we're actually, this Canadian tour that we're all on, a dollar from every ticket is going to like a water project that we're embarking on. So it started with that. And then when the Avenged Sevenfold tour got canceled, my buddy Mike, who works there, kind of said, how would you like to take it to a next level? And actually, we'll go down to Africa and we can see it with our own eyes what's really going on. So we jumped at the chance, went down there and just kind of toured around and just, like I said, just looked at, just kind of saw firsthand some of the challenges that they're facing, like, you know, no access to fresh drinking water. The average person walks 6 kilometers to get water down there. And then there's a lot of child protection issues and stuff. Just things that you can't even fathom until you see it with your own eyes and you're actually there. So, so we got to kind of really go down and check it out. And then we came back like totally inspired to do something, you know, to try to raise some money and raise some awareness and try to make a little bit of a difference. You know, like you can put in a well down there for like $20,000 that'll like service 1,000 people. It's like crazy that these little moves. And so, you know, we're fortunate to have the audience. And
yeah, And we met a guy that, like, he travels, like, all day to go get water with donkeys and a, it, like, it's crazy. Like, his whole day just to fill up water.
Just to get the water for the people. So where are you guys going to? Like, what part of Africa were you in?
We were in Kenya.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we went all to small towns and, yeah, visited people.
Like, do people have any idea, like, do they tell, like, these are American musicians or is just, here's some white guys coming to...
They knew that kind of, like, we were with the, this trip was with World Vision, so they kind of would they'd see the trucks and they kind of, they were actually quite friendly for the most part because they knew that we were there trying to help out, you know, mm-hmm. and, but one thing that was, like, super cool was that, like, there was no hopelessness down there at all. It wasn't like people were down and out and miserable. It's like they're waking up and, like Matt said, like, he's going to get water with a donkey in a cart for 14 hours. That is his day, that he wakes up and he does what he's has to do and just to survive, you know.
And yeah, and the same guy, he sits up in a tree for like for hours on the day watching to see if, like, what was it, like,
baboon, he had to, there's a season in the crop in the, like when he, you know, he grows his crops, he grows tomatoes and watermelons and stuff, and for 2 months from the time the sun rises till the time sun sets, he sits in a tree to overlook his crops to fend off the baboons. Like, just stuff. Like,
yeah.
So I gave him my sunglasses. Like, well, here's some shades for the day. Like, if you're sitting up there, man.
What is it like when you give them sunglasses, for example? Do they know what a sunglass is?
Yeah. Like? Oh, they're so grateful. Like,
are they that like primitive though? Like, do they like what is?
Well,
sunglasses?
we were basically in areas that were like extremely impoverished. Like, gotcha. People living in, like I said, like mud huts and like. Just they have nothing. Yeah, so we took like a hockey bag full of, like, soccer balls, and we went to like the dollar rack at Walmart and just like filled it up with shoes and stuff like that. And
yeah,
we gave a teacher, like, they were using, they, like, soccer's pretty popular down there, and they were using a ball made up of like wrapped up pieces of tire. And so we gave the teacher a $7 soccer ball, and like I noticed him, like, later, like, in the day, like, he was kissing the soccer ball. Like, we finally have a soccer ball. It's, like, just crazy stuff, man. You know, it was a big reset button for us to come by. It's humbling, and, you know.
It puts perspective on things, doesn't it? You know, we start off the conversation with 14 number ones, and then we're talking about guys playing soccer with wrapped up, you know, tires. Yes. It's the two sides of the coin. Did you guys play for them?
Yeah, we did. We played for a bunch of different schools, and... also some communities, they'd, like, we'd show up and they'd do like the song and dance for us, and then we'd play
a
few songs for them. So it's like just like showing each other the culture
of yeah. Was it your songs that you played?
Yeah, we played a few covers too.
The one that went over the best was If You're Happy and You Know It. Like, it went over so well. We might add it to the 3 Days Grace set because it was hot down there. They couldn't get enough of it, man.
I just did that cruise where Matt and I were talking last night, the Jericho cruise, and Corey Taylor played an acoustic set, and the one that tore the house down was SpongeBob SquarePants.
No,
everyone knows it. SpongeBob SquarePants. I was bringing it down. I wanted to ask you, Barry and Brad, on the other side here, you mentioned the Avenged Sevenfold tour, and I just wanted to, just curiously, you guys had this big tour booked, and it was basically arenas, or, you know, maybe even the sheds, and it gets canceled because Matt Shadows got sick with his throat and all that stuff. Does that screw up, like, a whole year's worth of touring plans? Does it financially hurt? Like, how does that work for you guys?
Yeah, we were kind of bummed because, you know, it was the summer and it was our first tour getting going on this record, really. Mm. So it was kind of, you know, when it got shut down. At the same time, it is summer, so
right.
We thought, well, if there's a time to have a little break, it was cool. But, yeah, but it sort of gave us a slow start, you know. So
how much time did you guys have, like, knowing that the tour was getting canceled?
Not much. I think it was, like, within a few days.
Yeah.
And then we had 7 weeks off. But it's funny because we had a conversation about 2 weeks before that, and we were talking about cancellation insurance. You know, because now, you know, we never used to take cancellation insurance. It's like, we're doing this. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're like, nah, we don't need that. You know, it's good to go. And 2 weeks later, canceled. We're like, oh, no.
Could've used it, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's amazing, dude, just thinking about that, you know, the fact that you guys were, I think it was the first of three behind Prophets of Rage, which is basically Rage Against the Machine and Avenge. And this is, once again, you guys are a huge band and going on first for these other two even bigger bands. Yeah. you know, the two sides of the coin. How is that for you guys? Because I'm assuming you'd probably get 30 minutes to do the set.
Yeah,
is that
what it you guys probably would have been a long set. But, you know, we figured there's going to be 25,000 people every night. And, you know, it was a great lineup, great tour in the summer. You know, it'd be good exposure. And it's a good start. You know, we were just that would have been the first tour off of this record. So I thought it'd be a good start. But, you know, things happen for a reason. Yeah, and whatever. Yeah.
And talking about things happening, I wanted to talk about this. You know, when your original singer Adam left, now Matt is in the band, and Matt is Brad's younger brother. Mm-hmm. So was this like your first choice? Like, this is the guy, or how did that work?
He was the only choice. It's been 6 years. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Funny is we played a show with you guys in Hartford right after there was a big school shooting or something like
that. That was the last show.
And that was the last show because I took a picture with him, and maybe I think you were in a tube rat or something. And somebody had posted that, and I was like, I think that was his last show.
You know, like looking back now, it's like, you know, sometimes I do believe in fate and stuff like that. Sure. And it was inevitable. But like now looking back, it's just like, I think because I found out, and then I called you Brad, and he was having sushi with him. Yeah. It was just like this, like, what are you doing the rest of your life?
Yeah, it was very strange because we didn't like hang out too much. And we didn't have dinner.
You were busy with My Darkest Days.
And you were busy with this band. And we were just like out of the blue, just having sushi. And he got the call and was like, oh, you better get your singing shoes on. I'm like, what are you talking about, man?
How was that for you, though? Because My Darkest Day had some steam as well.
Yeah, like we were just starting to write our third record. Mm-hmm. You know, I already knew the songs, and it was nerve-wracking for sure. But I just went in the basement. About a week later, I had about 7 weeks to learn the set. And the first show was in front of 8,000 people in an arena. And we haven't looked back, really.
Was it hard for you to tell, though, you tell your guys that, like, hey, man, something's coming up?
Yeah, at first it was just, like, filling in. And then I think they came out to a show and saw the show.
Yeah.
And I think, like, all of them, like, knew.
It's a natural fit.
Yeah, they knew by the end of the show that...
That was the way it was. Yeah. So I remember we saw you guys at El Paso at the Street Festival. Oh, remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was when you were in the band, right, Matt. I think it was just maybe 6 months later or something like that. So it was a pretty quick changeover.
Yeah. It's always been, like, he's always been right there, though. Because even, I mean, when we were... You know, Brad and I have been playing together since we were 15 years old. And basically, you know, Matt is a little younger. He was kind of that kid playing with Hot Wheels over in the corner. But, you know, and then fast forward a little bit, when we were making our first album in 2002, you know, Matt, he's a great songwriter. So he had some cool riffs. And so he actually co-wrote on the first 3 Days Grace album.
Okay.
You know, so it's always been at arm's length, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What was it like for you as the older brother? And now your younger brother's like the lead singer.
I think it's awesome. You know, Matt, you picked up a guitar early. You know, I think once you saw us jamming, you know, in the basement, you always had a guitar in your hand. And we recorded his first demo.
Yeah. Never got paid for that,
no,
did we?
No, we didn't. No, no, no.
How old is he in the first demo?
He would have been 14, maybe? 13,
I had a Tascam 4-track.
Yeah,
just volunteering my engineering time.
Of course. Yeah. What was the song called? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't even remember. It was just a riff. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you guys, this is pretty crazy that you mentioned that you guys have been playing together since you were 15 years old. So this is one of those times when you guys were getting together in the basement and wanting to be rock and roll stars. And
well, it was one of those things like I joined the football team and I just rode the pine. They wouldn't play me. So I wasn't going to get girls that way. I don't know how to wrestle. So I was like, I got to do something here to be cool. So it was like literally grade 9, like right out of the gate. As soon as I got to high school, I'm like, I got to form a band here.
Yeah. So was he just in your class?
No. So Neil and Adam met first at Adam Scott in Peterborough.
Yeah.
And Adam moved to Norwood, joined our ball team. And he was kind of, you know, the new guy, right? And the first thing he asked me, he says, do you smoke? I was like, no, I don't smoke. Do you play guitar? No. It's like, well, you should get a bass and let's have a cigarette. So we started smoking and playing and that was it.
It's always, I remember I was walking through a field when I was about 14 years old and there was a guy walking towards me and I had a Metallica Master of Puppets shirt on. And he's like, hey, you like Metallica? Yeah. You like beer? Yeah. let's be friends. And we're still friends to this day.
That's amazing.
That's all you need, right?
That's it. That's it. Yeah. That's
so, I mean, when you're talking about coming, especially coming from Canada as well, and there's a great rock and roll tradition in Canada, but people outside of Canada look at us kind of weirdly sometimes. There's a little bit of a culture shock. Even when you just said grade nine, no one ever says that in the States. It's the ninth grade, or it's a freshman.
Yeah.
Which still, I don't understand. Freshman, junior, sophomore, senior. Yeah. How is the junior? No, how's the freshman lower than the junior?
I know.
Yeah. A junior is the lowest, right?
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
I agree.
So how was it for you guys when you first started cracking the U.S. market? Because as we know, there's a lot of Canadian bands that never really did that.
We got some advice early on to sign to an American label. So we sort of we had a Canadian label that was like sort of courting us, but then we kind of wanted their American counterpart to be involved. Mm-hmm. So basically, we signed with Jive Records originally, which at first people thought we were crazy because they're like, "What do you mean you're signing to Britney Spears and NSYNC and Backstreet Boys label?" And then we got thinking like, "Wait a minute, they're looking to leap into rock and roll." And we're going to be the priority. So we were like, yeah, no, this. And they obviously had a few bucks. Those artists kicked up a bit of dust. So they actually drove up from New York in a snowstorm, actually. And that's when we knew they were pretty serious. And they came to our hometown of Peterborough and saw us play there.
Peterborough Pete's.
Yeah, man.
That's right, man.
And then they tabled an offer. And so we signed to straight out of New York City. So that was kind of, that helped us kind of, you know.
But just the thing you said, yeah, you know, we decided to sign with America. Like, a lot of bands don't have the choice.
Yeah.
You guys obviously had a little bit of a bidding war going on because of your demos, or what was it?
Yeah, we met Gavin Brown in Toronto, and we started recording demos, and we wrote, like, I Hate Everything About You, Home. So we had like half of the record done, you know, I think everybody obviously loved I Hate Everything About You. And there was a bit of a bid there.
Yeah. Everything was kind of lukewarm until, you know, we wrote I Hate Everything About You at like 4 a.m. in a studio in Toronto. As soon as we had that demo, it was just like everything kind of came together. People were like, there's your first single right there.
But you guys have a great fan base like worldwide. You know, you were telling me you guys just came back from Europe and then Russia. And then, you know, last night we were talking about all the different places you played just in Quebec, the province itself, like Trois-Rivières and all these different places. Like, is there certain areas of the world that are better for you guys?
Yeah, for sure. I think, just recently we started going to Europe, you know, and it's kind of when Matt joined the band.
Yeah. And now it just keeps building and building. Every time we go there, it's just more people.
For
and
Europe.
Yeah, for Europe. And the first time we went to Russia, we were like, we didn't know what to expect. And then all of a sudden we show up and there's tons of people and people waiting for us at the airports and
hotel lobbies. They know everywhere. Place. So like they'll be waiting, like you'll be eating bacon and eggs being filmed by your fans. Like,
how do they know?
I don't know. No, we either have a mole on the road with us or they just know.
Barry's making a few calls before every show.
We're going to be here.
So what's it like? Tell us about Russia and the rock and roll scene, because I always think back to the famous Iron Maiden Behind the Iron Curtain when it was the first time a rock band went be there and they were just like, Iron Maiden, we love you. It's so great. Like, is it still that vibe or is it?
May I embrace you and make selfie?
Yeah, they're very passionate. I think, you know, like over here, we get a lot of music. Mm-hmm. There's so much of it, and they don't get as much over there. So I think when any time a band comes in, they just attach to it. But what's interesting about them, they'll learn everything about you too. Huh? They'll go on the social medias, and they really, you know, don't just listen to your music. They're really passionate about you as people too, and they want to know everything. And
so is most of the music there like bootlegged? Is there record labels there?
Yeah, I don't know.
How do you get booked in Russia, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think that they're just, I mean, like everywhere else in the world, I mean, they're just so connected, social media, that just, you know, social media really broke down the borders everywhere. There's a site that not a lot of people are aware of, and I would tell bands, like, if you want to start your career in Eastern Europe, you need to know about VK.com, which is basically like Eastern Europe's version of Facebook. And so we went over there for the first time. We're like, man, like we got a career over here. This is huge. Like first time we went to Moscow, we sold like 8,000 tickets.
What?
Yeah, it was not. It was crazy. And then so the promoter was like, you know, you guys should be on this VK.com. We're like, what is that? And she's like, well, no, you need to know about it. And the Moscow show, she introduced us to this guy, brought him back. He's like, this is your community team leader who kind of is just a big fan who created 3 Days Grace community page on VK. We're like, oh yeah, cool. They're like, she's like, no, it has 100,000 members. We're like, excuse me? Like, so then he made us administrator. We made profiles on it and he made us administrators. And so suddenly we just went on with like, hey fans, we're here. And it just like, it literally launched our career over there.
You're kidding me. Yeah. So what is it? It's like a
VK.com. It's like Facebook,
yeah. But another thing that on VK, I think you can download music too. And it saves to your profile. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's how people are sharing the music and actually having it.
I don't know that's quite legal. I think there's lawsuits going on about that. But
but still, like, whatever it takes to, like I've never heard of this before, and I've been around the world.
There's probably a Chris Jericho fan site on there that you don't even know about.
Yeah. You have to check that out. See, but that's the way of the world now is how do people access your music? And there's web lawsuits, whatever, but... does it really matter? Because, you know, like you said, if you're going over there and selling that many tickets, it's obviously helping.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I mean, because you guys started in 2003, which was kind of just the end of the record selling days. You know, was it a weird transition for you guys to have to deal with that?
It was kind of the Wild West a little bit because we had an old school record deal, which didn't cover like the world of streaming, you know? So we kind of had to like do a little... just make sure that we weren't like just giving stuff away, you know. But for us, it's, you know, it hasn't, it's affected us more positively than negatively, just in the fact of like they were saying, like we can go to Eastern Siberia and like the major language barrier, but they know every single lyric to every song, you know what I mean? Like the passion of the fans, you know, creates a nice healthy career regardless of how they're consuming the music, you know, and it's gotten a lot better. It's not really a free for all anymore.
So what's the food like in Russia? Like, what are the conditions like there?
It's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Really? So there's no GMOs allowed there. So everything's so fresh.
It's like hormones or whatever, like GMO is like the...
genetically modified food.
Okay, so gotcha.
Like Monsanto stuff, right? Like
Like preservatives.
Very clean, very fresh. Yeah, your bread's like...
They use like cane sugar instead of high fructose corn syrup.
So yeah.
There's a soup called borscht that's really good. Borscht, yeah.
They put dill in everything, though. That's the only thing.
Like. Borscht is beet soup. Because I'm Ukrainian, so I know the borscht.
Yeah.
Red beet soup, yeah.
And even, like, the fans know that I like borscht. So one fan gave me instant borscht. And I brought it home and actually made borscht the other night. It was good. Really? Instant borscht.
What Canadians are we, right? Yeah. Instant borscht.
That's brutal.
What were some of your favorite tours that you've had over the years? Who were some of the bigger bands that you went out with?
Well, early on, I think Nickelback, we must have done 500 shows with them.
Yeah.
We went to Australia with them. We did North America and over and over and over. And they were, you know, we kind of learned a lot from them. You know, they...
what kind of stuff did you learn?
Well, you know, Chad took us under his wing a lot, you know.
And first of all, what a great guy.
I know, right?
And gets a bum rap for whatever reason.
Oh, he's amazing.
Because they're
amazing.
So popular or whatever, but he's a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, in the early days, the first record, he'd always come right after his set, knocking on our door. You boys ready to go? Let's go have a drink. You know, every night.
Total drum heller, drinker, whatever he's from.
That was a big one, I think.
What kind of stuff did you say he taught you stuff?
Well, they, you know, at the time they were playing big show stuff, right? They had pyro and, you know, all this production and just like, wow, you know.
Well-oiled machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very cool to watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think highlight was we got a phone call to open for the Rolling Stones.
What?
We did two shows with the Stones in Saskatchewan at Taylor Field.
Holy smokes.
50,000 people a night. And then... it was pretty cool. It was a show and then a day off. And the day off, their crew, they have like 200 crew members or something, decided to throw a party at this banquet hall. And they invited us to it. Yeah. Some of the guys, some of us had our moms out and stuff like that because it was the Stones after all.
Yeah.
So we all go to this party and the moms are there and everything. And sure enough, the Stones roll in, all four of them just rolling in. Like, and Mick Mick Jagger's kind of always dancing. He's just always kind of dancing. And like, you just see him, and he rolled right up to us and was just like, great show last night, boys. How about that full moon? You know, we watched the show. It was just like, holy shit. And then he'd kind of saunter back onto the dance floor a little bit, and you'd just see the moms kind of like gravitate over trying to dance with Mick, and then Mick would kind of back off the dance floor, and then the moms would scatter off the dance floor.
Yeah, it was funny. He'd leave the dance floor, then go to the bar. The dance floor would empty. All the ladies would follow him and go back to the dance floor.
I just love the concept that he's always dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I guess that's all I'm seeing now. Yeah. That's insane. How did you get the cold open for the Stones?
I think they just wanted, like, they wanted, you know, the older people to bring, to have a band where, like, the parents would bring the kids, you know, and we've always had a pretty young fan base and stuff. So I think that they just wanted to kind of cover both ground. They did, I heard a crazy number. They did, like, over the, because they, their merch, they come in a week before the show, and then they have merch a week after the show. So there's like merch. They did something like $5 million in
like
merch.
That's
unbelievable, right?
Yeah, you could buy anything from like the lips that lit up all the way to like the $2,000 leather jacket.
It's amazing to me when you see that sort of stuff. Like they just announced their new tour this summer in the States, but there's like a show, then like 4 days off, then a show, then like 2 days off. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but there must be. There must be a reason for it. Like you said, maybe that's where they're setting up the merch for 4 days in LA or something or whatever it may be. That's crazy though. What an amazing experience.
They have like three stages. So there's one stage that's up, ready to go. One's going up and one's being torn down. Mm-hmm. And it's like just massive.
How was it for you, Matt, when you came into the band and coming, you know, with My Darkest Day, but then 3 Days Grace is so much bigger. Now you're kind of commanding arena crowds. Because you're a great frontman. You've got that vibe to it. Was it something you took to instantly, or was it a little bit nerve-wracking at first?
It was very nerve-wracking at first, but I feel like I've come out of my shell. In my old band, I had a guitar the whole time, and usually my guitar player would speak because he was really loud, and he was really good at that. But, you know, it's made me come out of my shell and make people get up and have fun, and yeah.
Because you don't really play too much guitar.
No, right? No. But when I was younger, I used to run around and freak out and like just like I was a big fan of Billy Talent, and like he's just a maniac on stage. So I think I've come into that too, and just like let go and freak out up there.
Do you guys ever get any like family fights? Or do you have that vibe at all?
No, I mean, we have our moments for sure.
Brothers are brothers, right?
Yeah, brothers are brothers. There's always a day where you want to punch each other, but it gets resolved pretty fast.
I just sit and stare at you when you're mad.
That pisses
me off.
That makes
you even more mad.
He trains MMA too, so they have like an agreement of mutual destruction, I think.
But he's really strong.
Well, he's the older brother too,
right? I still got the old man strength on him. Yeah.
What did your parents say when you told them you're bringing him in the band?
I think my mom was happy because she worries a lot about us, you know, when we're on the road. She's like, you can take care of each other now. Yeah. I know. But it's been great, man. You know, it's an awesome feeling. And he's been a brother to this whole band for the whole, you know, time. So
was there ever any, not backlash, but your fans, did they accept you right away? Was it a little bit of a grace period?
Well,
no pun intended.
You know, I mean,
was there a 3 days grace period?
Oh, there was a lot of trolls, you know, right off the top. It was bad, you know, and we got sucked into it a little bit, you know, trying to stay. We read a lot of that crap.
Yeah, there's always trolls.
Yeah,
no matter what you do, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I didn't really have to deal with it before in my old band. I never really had too many trolls online. So then when I joined this, I was looking at Facebook a lot and like reading it, like, I wish Matt would die. It's like,
I know. You really want me to die? Like, you physically want me to leave this planet, right?
Yeah, there's some stuff like that. And it's like, really? Like, so after a while, I had to stop paying attention to it.
It's stopped. It's not there anymore.
Four number ones silenced quite a few of those trolls.
Yeah. But if you're going to go into that world, you have to have thick skin, you know, especially for something like that.
Oh, and I didn't. I think
you lost like, 25 pounds or something?
Yeah, I got down to 135 pounds.
You're on a strict diet of bananas and panic.
Yeah.
You really lost that much weight?
Yeah. I was about 160 and I got down to like 135.
Just from nerves or from
sickly?
Stress?
Stress, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I always laugh at that though. Like, you know, a fan, it's like when Axl came in to sing for AC/DC and so many people were complaining, and like, Would you rather them just not play anymore? Just stop? Is that would that make you happy? Okay, like if 3 days grace just is done now? It's not like you had a choice. Either you continue on or you don't, right? Well,
and there was also the side that were thanking us, you know, for keeping this journey going. And, you know, I think that there was more of them than the trolls, but...
Yeah, when those people go away, or actually what happens most of the time is they'll complain, bitch about it, and then go buy your new record and go to your show anyways.
Exactly.
That's just the way it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
You mentioned Billy Talent. Let's talk a little bit about Canadian bands that people in the States might not know about, because Billy Talent is a band that... I don't think a lot of Americans know them.
We are big fans of Finger 11 too. And
wow, so, what's those guitar players' name? Rick.
Rick and
what's
his
Rick,
James?
What's his Rick Jacket? I know it's Rick Jacket.
James. We were heavily influenced by those guys, but that's probably our biggest influence.
Like, really?
Absolutely. Yeah, when we first started, we just wanted to be Finger 11. Yeah. Like their first record, Tip, is, I think that record represents our biggest influence, I think, if you were to put it on one album. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Rainbow Butt Monkeys too.
Yeah, they were good, man.
Rainbow Butt Monkeys.
That was Finger 11.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like I said, do they still gig? Are they playing still? Because they had a little bit of steam in the States.
Yeah, well, they actually had two number ones at top 40.
Really?
Number ones.
I can hear the one riff in my head.
One thing was the ballad, and then there was... Paralyzer, yeah, but I think those two songs, like, they're a pretty heavy band, and I think that those two songs kind of just maybe did, like, weren't accurate representations of what the band really was. So I don't know if maybe, like, they just didn't really jump into rock, or was top 40 and was kind of somewhere in the middle, but they're an amazing band.
Wow, yeah. To get to number one too, that's something that, like, when this Judas record first came out, and a lot of people say, like, oh, rock radio is dead, it doesn't matter, and it's like you realize, oh, it matters. It still makes such a difference. And to actually get a top 10 or to get a number one, that's a completely different world, and that's hard to do. I think a lot of people don't get that in this day and age, you know?
For sure. You just realize, yeah, the competition out there, like, everybody, how many bands are hungry to do what we get to do every day, you know? Like, that's, we never take that for granted, because first of all, you got to write a song that's engaging and compelling and honest and believable, right? Like that the listener goes, wow, I can really hear my life in that story, that's really great difficult point. Thing to do. You know, it's easier to make something that's so complex that only you understand it, right? But reciprocally, it's really hard to make something where someone just goes, that moves me. I feel something when they hear that. And that's the part that... You know, it never gets easy, you know, so.
And that's step one. And step two is actually getting the spins.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, like, when whatever song we had got to top 10, it's like, okay, this song is top 10. It's got 500 spins. And number one's got like 1500. How do you get from 500 to 1500?
Right.
Like, that's the million dollar question.
That's the challenge.
You know?
Yeah.
What was your first number one with the band, Matt?
Oh,
did you have a number one with Darkest Days?
Yeah.
You did?
Porn Star Dancing was...
You guys just throwing number ones around here like nothing.
We should be playing Porn Star, man. That's another number one.
Don't encourage him.
Oh. I think you should do it. Shut up, Jericho. Okay. I'll be quiet now.
We could maybe play a part of a little bit of it.
Guns N' Roses played Slither this year at concert.
Really?
Well,
that's cool.
You know, so says, a little Velvet Revolver there.
That's pretty cool, actually.
If it's good enough for Axl, Neil, I'm just saying. So Darkest Days had a number one.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it called?
Porn Star Dancing. And it featured Zach Wilde and Chad from Nickelback.
I didn't recall that.
And we also had Ludacris on it. So it was just like jam-packed with like...
chock full of guests.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
If someone wants to see something very interesting, you should... His first single off his second record called Casual Sex... Mm-hmm. Look up the unedited version of the Casual Sex video, which features Ron Jeremy and a goat and a bunch of naked chicks.
And a bunch of naked goats.
That's a great video.
It is a great video.
Wow. It was a good time.
With the goats or what?
No, it wasn't just goats.
Wow, I didn't realize that you guys had that much success.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because my old keyboardist, he just had a kid, and like when he grows up, he's gonna watch that video and see his dad like sitting between with a girl between Ron Jeremy, and Ron Jeremy's holding a goat and he's making out with this girl, and then then Ron Jeremy's making out with the girl. It's like,
Dad, what do you do? What is this?
Like, that's my dad.
Yeah. CGI, son.
Didn't some of the guys lose their girlfriends over that video? Did they?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. You did?
Some of the guys, yeah.
Yeah, on Wikipedia it says like a lot of the band members went through a lot of crap after this video. Some lost their girlfriends. And... yeah, mine left.
Mine was one. What was your first number one with 3 Days?
A song called Painkiller.
Oh,
2014.
Yeah. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
So that must have been kind of cool for you guys. I was a little bit nervous, like to think, can we do it again?
Yeah, well, we had like that song came about pretty quickly after you joined. So as soon as we and then subsequently, I Am Machine, we kind of wrote it. We wrote it on the road, and we were like, let's just. We didn't have a record ready, and we consulted with management. We're like, let's just record these songs and just drop them and just go boom. This is it, and then see what happens, you know. And then when both of those songs went to number one, that kind of like. We were like, okay, yeah. We're good.
And with those ones, you wrote those with Johnny Andrews, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Or Painkiller, at least, for sure.
Yeah. And I Machine. Yeah, we do a lot of co-writing with Johnny.
Is the guy that we worked with on Judas. As a matter of fact, a couple times, Johnny, I was going to come in and do vocals. Like, well, man, I got some writing sessions scheduled with 3 Days Grace. And I was like, man, tell him to wait. I got to finish this song.
Well, I got to be honest. When we first heard the song Judas, I was like, Johnny, where does that come from? That should have been a 3 Days Grace song.
That's a great song.
We're all arguing with each other now because Elevator, Matt wrote that one, which came from one band to the other. Yeah, we're all arguing. Like, that's the thing. It's like we're getting ready to go back in the studio with Johnny, and it's like, yeah. Does he have anything? And it's like, Johnny never has anything, but yet he's got all these snippets from, well, this band wrote that, this band wrote this, and it's like, just can we have them all? And you're probably thinking the same. Yeah. But I mean, had you worked with somebody like that before as far as having a co-writer?
Yeah, we've always kind of collaborated, but it's just, we'll bring one more person in, just because we all co-write, like we all write the lyrics, we all play guitar. Most of the stuff comes together on either acoustic or just like a little keyboard, and everybody comes in with titles, like everybody's got a big bag of tricks, and we kind of bust it all out and pick all the best ideas. And sometimes, like having another guy there he's there to write a song, because otherwise we just start goofing off and we don't get anything done. And you know, so but we bring in a guy and it's like, okay, the task at hand is to write.
Did he produce the record too?
No, okay. We use two producers on this album. We use Gavin Brown and Howard Benson.
Yeah. It's good to have somebody that kind of is the principal, though, that like, you know, like he whatever he says goes, you know, because if you don't have that, you know, musicians can tend to get up our own asses sometimes. Oh, yeah. Whereas if you have someone to say, this is good, this is bad, it might hurt your feelings a bit, but it works.
His go-to is, it's an interesting concept. I just can't picture 3 Days Grace doing it, which also means it sucks.
It's a great idea, just not for Fozzy. That's the one I got. when you're talking about musicianship, and I noticed watching some of your set, Neil, that you play keyboards while you're drumming.
Yeah, kind of in between. Yeah, like a lot of interlude stuff, you know, a lot of intros are kind of synthesized. I've always loved EDM. So these guys allow me to kind of infuse the band with a little bit of EDM stuff, like synthy elements and stuff. So I want to reproduce it live, and I don't want to be like having it run automatically. So I just kind of pick my spots where I can kind of jump over to play some organ.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah. Oh, my son's cheersing us here.
All right, cheers, buddy. That was nice.
He's having a
nice
pop. Little, he's having a pop over there.
Yeah. Got a pop. Yeah, he's got a pop. That's a Canadian word. Nice pop. It's kind of harkening back to the Geddy Lee of playing bass, singing, and playing keyboards at the same time. Right. It's like you're just shoving it in all of our faces, right? Thanks, Geddy.
Yeah. Thanks a lot,
Geddy. Shouldn't I be making double if I'm playing two instruments?
I think so.
You know what I mean? We should talk about that.
Yeah. I think we should talk about playing the porn.
Porn star dancing.
Porn star dancing.
Well, he's got the porn stash to do it right now.
Dude, the first thing I saw when I saw you guys in Moncton was Matt's stash.
The flavor saver.
Jeez. Can't wait to shave this thing off, man.
And then he said November, and it makes me feel bad.
Right?
And with me and Brad here, we're not representing the cause.
All the Russian girls have been messaging.
Matt, shave
please
it.
Please shave thing it. Off your face.
Matt.
I've got this business. Well, it'd be a non-profit charitable initiative. Vajanuary. I actually I went through a phase like late at night when I've had a few wines that I'd go and on GoDaddy and I'd buy a bunch of URLs just to have. So I actually own vajanuary.com.
Oh, well, so we just had to figure out what it would be.
It would be in support of like some sort of women's health issue, but then they don't shave for January.
Oh, just like 70s Bush.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it would completely kill the Caribbean tourism industry because ain't nobody wearing a bikini in vajanuary.
Around the world, guys are going, shut up, Sanderson. I just Jeez, Louise, what an idea.
Club Med just goes out of business.
as we wind down here, I know we both got shows tonight, but who were some of your influences like when you were growing up as a bass player, as Canadian musicians, whatever it may be? were you a Rush guy, for example, Barry? Who were you
into? I love Rush. I mean, I'm Canadian. I gotta love Rush.
Yeah, you have
right?
to, right? Did you ever play any shows with Rush at all?
No, I've seen him a bunch of times, but yeah. No, never had to do a show with him.
I guess they really don't have opening bands anymore, do they?
They don't
right?
need it. Yeah. Right.
Who else were you into?
Well, I had older brothers, and I'm a little older than these guys, so I grew up on a lot of 70s stuff, like Rainbow. It's one of my all-time favorite bands.
Richie Blackmore.
We were laughing the other night, actually, because I say Rainbow so much that the guy started having, and I didn't realize they were doing it at first. Hey, every time Barry says Rainbow, you got a drink. And I see these guys like every...
By the end of the night, they're so hammered.
Yeah.
What do you just, what would Rainbow do? Or why are you saying Rainbow so much?
Oh, just one of my favorite bands. So later in the evening, like, I don't talk a lot in the day, but you know, catch me about 2 a.m.
2 a.m., you can't get a word in at all. And he tells the same story.
Yeah, it's like a skipping record that just keeps going.
Yeah, I just threw on some Rainbow, and then we were, and then I went on, and what's that guy from Rainbow?
Did you see that Richie did some shows last year as Rainbow?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah. I mean, I never got to see them, but that'd be awesome.
That's cool, though, because it was a drag when he just stopped playing rock guitar, like to play the mandolin or whatever the hell he was doing over the last 20 years. You know?
Who played, who sang?
Some guy from Italy or something. It was basically a no-name guy. Huh. It's hard. You guys sing the Dio and sing, you know, Graham Bonnet and sing Joel Turner and all those different eras, right? So, how about you, Brad?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, we grew up writing music during like the whole grunge phase. So, you know, bands like Alice in Chains and Nirvana and Soundgarden and, you know.
Yeah, those types.
Yeah. I remember on The Wolf, in Peterborough, The Wolf 101.5 had the alternative route every night. We used to tape it and then learn the songs and play the songs. And so that was a huge thing for us, you know, just learning the craft through that, you know.
Yeah. And whenever we say Peterborough, I just remember I mentioned this earlier, Peterborough Pete's and Sebastian Bach's brother.
Oh, yeah.
Used Zach. To be.
And the goalie, yeah.
Zach. And they won the, what's the championship for the OHL? Whatever, the Turner Cup or whatever it is.
Memorial Cup.
And Sebastian jumps on the ice with those little skinny little shoes that he wears, little dress shoes with the pointed tips. And he's like slipping on the ice. Dude, you did it, dude. That's awesome. How about you, Neil?
I worship Tool and everything that Maynard has ever done. Every project he's ever embarked in, and Danny Carey's my favorite drummer. I've just always been a total Tool freak, and
there's not a lot of Tool element in 3 Days Grace.
We are influenced by them, just the chunky riffs. And my style, I like to kind of like, Danny Carey is like really articulate, and sometimes he doesn't like overuse his cymbals and hi-hats and stuff like that. And I kind of cop that a little bit. I try not to have like sloshy cymbals going on all the time. Just, it kind of cleans it up. Sometimes it makes it actually sound heavier when you close it up over heavy riff and stuff. So, I have an older brother. He's 8 years older than me. And I remember you know, he always used to blast stuff in his room. And I just remember, you know, when he would play this one particular band, the drums just sounded different. It was just like, I couldn't put my finger on it, but I loved it. And it was Zeppelin, you know, and just, there's something about the groove. So I was always like big Zeppelin guy too.
Big Bonham guy, right?
100%.
No one's ever replicated that.
No.
Actually, Jason Bonham does pretty good with that Zeppelin experience that he has. I mean, obviously that's the guy.
There's something about the pocket, the way that he plays that, the relationship between the hi-hats and where the snare sits in the beat. Mm-hmm. that like I don't think will ever be replicated.
That's chemistry as a rhythm section, like for you guys playing together for so long. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, non-musicians, might not pick that up, but it's so important to have that chemistry with your drummer and your bass player.
Yeah, and yeah, sitting back on the beat makes stuff heavier, mm-hmm. you know. And if you're always kind of jumping ahead, mm-hmm. it sounds more anxious. But if you sit back a little bit and with a slow, heavy riff. Like I'm really into stoner rock, slow, heavy, chunky stuff. I think mm-hmm. we have a lot of slow, heavy songs, and that stuff kind of kicks my ass.
Have you ever heard King?
Yeah.
King? Yeah, they're totally up that. Like, oh, yeah. We toured with them quite a bit. They have that total vibe.
I mean, I think Black Sabbath is the original stoner band.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah, to this day.
Yeah, slow and heavy.
How about you, Matt?
I listen to a lot of the same stuff Brad did, like The Doors and Nirvana, mm-hmm. a lot of the grunge stuff. Mm-hmm. I got into Marilyn Manson. Big time when I was in high school.
Yeah,
just made me feel better about teenage the awkward angst, time of being a teenager.
Yeah.
You used to snort Ritalin, right, when you were a kid?
Maybe I did.
Did that have anything to do with awkwardness?
Maybe I did.
Yeah, the parents put me on Ritalin when I was young, and at one point I just started selling it to kids at school.
There's just a little tidbit.
There's your blabbermouth headline right there.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Did you guys? I kind of really dig your stage gear. There's like some interesting elements to it. There's some like dirt type stuff, like your black streaks on your arms and that sort of thing. Very subtle stuff that a lot of people might not notice from the crowd, but when you see it up close, what's the influence of that?
Well, Matt joined the band. We had a whole theme with like a post-apocalyptic kind of vibe, and we just started like we had dirty pants, and you know we everything was torn and ripped, and we had makeup, and we kind of went for it. You know, baby powder on all the shit. And
it was a time where a lot of heavy bands were just like suit and tying it up. Like it was just a lot of suit and ties going on in rock and roll, and we were just like, no, let's just go up dirty.
You can't wear a suit and tie.
Yeah.
So we kind of just kept it. You know, Matt does it every show. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know.
Just it's a cool vibe. You know,
it's superstitious kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
I have to do it. I just like
you have to put like some makeup on or something.
Yeah. Or I get like freaked out if I don't like it.
It was funny the when you came and sang Elevator with us the first night you had a hat on, and because we have people come up on stage for one of the songs, I think some people thought it was someone else on stage singing, and then they finally figured out it was him, and then last night you took your hat off.
Came
on stage
and they
like,
freaked out. Yeah. Yeah, the first night they're like, "Who's this douche with the Fu Manchu coming up here ruining Fozzy's show?"
Right. Second night is like. Well, it's been a short tour of four shows, but what a great time. And last night in Quebec, one of the best shows that we've ever had. So many people. It was just amazing.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Just like that's one of your strongholds is the French Canadian market.
It's probably one of the best in the world for us, Quebec. Hmm. We've been to Quebec more than anywhere else, I think. Yeah, we're here three or four times a year. Just
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. They love
you
it.
You never know why certain areas.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah, just, like Quebec kind of does have like a European vibe where like they're very passionate about the message of the music, you know. So for a band like us where we write pretty emotional lyrics and stuff, I think that there's that in the water here where they mm-hmm. just they want to know where that emotion comes from, and they're just as passionate as we are about the music and stuff. I mean, that's like that everywhere, but just particularly here is just more. And maybe it's because English is the second language that mm-hmm. they really inspect the message and really get connected that way. I think this is the same for places in Europe where there is a language barrier, but they really want to learn what the words mean, and then by doing that they kind of really engage and connect to the
It's interesting too, like even as a front man, if you try and like speak French, the line or two is cool, but they want to hear English. Right. You know, if you go out there and spout pigeon French, they'll be like, we know you're not fluent.
Yeah, a few words here and there, and they dig it. Yeah.
Comment ça va? Yeah. Bonjour. Yeah. Merci. That's about it.
That's about it. No more than that.
Two last things. Were you guys ever to the Headstones?
Oh yeah, dude.
What a great band that no one.
Amazing.
Actually, Brad was on, you guys were on tour with them, and I was turning 14, I think.
Yeah.
And you got my birthday card signed by the Headstones, Hugh Dillon wrote, "Get laid this year, you little."
So I did.
He was a badass, man.
He was.
He used to, he'd smoke a cigarette on stage and flick it into the crowd.
Yeah.
Like shit like that.
Like just stuff you could never do that, right? Like
total punk. Just hork on the front row.
Hork. There's a Canadian word, hork.
Hockaloog.
There's a couple words that people don't, hork. Do you guys know what a parkade is? No. That might be a Western Canadian thing.
Parking lot.
A parking garage.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Parkade, don't know, like a peelers? You guys know peelers?
The peelers, yeah.
The peelers?
The ballet. Oh, yeah. The ballet is a good one.
The What's peelers.
The ballet.
The ballet.
Yeah, going to the ballet.
Yeah. Yeah. Rippers.
Rippers. These are euphemisms for strippers, guys. Yeah. That
rippers.
Yep. Rippers and peelers.
Yeah.
Rye and Coke, a rye.
Yeah.
They don't have any rye.
Yeah, that's right.
There's lots of those type of words. Boxing Day.
Oh, yeah.
Is a good one.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Going out for a rip. What are you doing? I'm just going out for a rip.
I was walking outside and I stepped in a puddle. I just gave myself a soaker.
Yeah,
soaker.
Got a soaker.
Or just fucking just folding somebody. Yeah. Buddy just got folded.
Buddy just got tuned.
Buddy just got dummied in the snowbank.
Face washed in the snowbank. Last question for you. What's your favorite song to play live?
I like Get Out Alive from 1X. Yeah.
That's the one?
That's the one.
Barry?
Riot. I like Riot probably the best.
Is there a cool solo in that?
It's a cool riff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun.
Killer.
The crowd starts chanting it halfway through the show. They want to hear it. So we hold out to the end. And
I love your stage jacket, too, by the way.
Oh, don't get too close to it.
Yeah. Oh, does it smell?
He washes it once every two years.
Whether it needs it or not.
It smells like a homeless guy. Like, you know that homeless, like, pee kind smell? Of urine? You know, like, when you go to a bank machine where homeless people sleep? You know that smell?
Yeah, after about a week of shows, the band, I noticed on stage, they just stop coming anywhere near me, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It's off. It's kind of off-putting.
What's your favorite, Neil?
What was the question again? I'm on the jacket.
What's your favorite smell of Barry's jacket?
There's just such a plethora of smells.
What's your favorite song to play live?
Right now, it's actually Infrared. It's just got that heavy riff, and it's like... It's the perfect jumper, so the whole crowd just gets jumping. But I love playing Chalk Outline. Favorite song that we've...
How do you guys pick your set list if you have 14 number ones and you can only play... Like if you're opening for somebody, you can only do 10 songs or even your own set. You just go do all the number ones and see you later or what?
Pretty much. Well, right now we're playing 22 songs. So
okay.
Just Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yeah, that should be the name of your next single.
Yeah, totally.
I'll call Johnny tonight. Well, that's a good idea, but not for 3 days, Grace. What's your favorite, Matt?
Mine's Good Life. People just start freaking out and moshing. That's about the third song in. So,
is that a song from your era?
Nope.
That's the Adam era?
Yep. But it's a jumper.
Was there anything that you had to do to sing those songs? I mean, obviously, you're singing them your way. But was there any issues as far as like the melody lines of them or whatever? You could pretty much handle them all, no problem.
Yeah, no, it was just putting my touch on them. Yeah,
that's great, man. Well, dudes, what a great couple nights it's been, and we don't want to go home, so we're just gonna follow you guys like deadheads now.
Let's do it
for the rest of the tour. But thank you, boys, and thanks to your son for the cheers.
All right,
there you go. What's his name again?
His name's Jet.
Jet, say something. Podcast he's debut
got,
right there.
He's got a mouthful of carrots.
and on that note. All right, thanks to 3 Days Grace. They're on the road with Disturbed on the Evolution Tour, and they're at the Target Center in Minneapolis tonight, Friday, February 1st. That tour runs through March 8th. Just follow 3 Days Grace on Instagram or on the Twitter at 3 Days Grace Official. Thanks again to Matt, Neil, Brad, and my boy Barry for hanging out on Talk is Jericho. Fozzy had a great time with them on that mini tour of Canada just before Christmas. They played some big, big rooms. We had some great shows, so hopefully we get a chance to do some more shows with them very, very soon. All right. And now, very soon, as in now, like I promised, here's your chance to win one of the awesome Steven Singer gold-dipped roses right now.
All you got to do, just tweet me at Talk Is Jericho and say, hook me up with the best rose ever. And this is very important. Use the hashtag I hate Steven Singer. I'll be picking 12 more winners at random tomorrow, Saturday, February 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern time. But you got to use the hashtag I hate Steven Singer if you want a chance to win. So once again, just tweet me at Talk Is Jericho. Say, hook me up with the best rose ever. Hashtag I hate Steven Singer. And 12 of you will win these gold tip roses, an amazing gift for Valentine's Day. All right. Coming up on Wednesday. Got another paranormal show for you. I know you guys are really into the paranormal episodes. We got one talking about the Mandela Effect with the Mandela Effect expert Laurie McDonald. Mandela Effect is related to memories, alternate realities. It's a phenomenon when a bunch of people share the same false memories of a past event. Trust me, it's insane. For example, is it the Berenstain Bears or the Bernstein Bears? You guys tell me that. At the end of We Are the Champions, does Freddie sing, "Of the World"? Yeah, no, he doesn't. And I thought he did. All of that related to the Mandela Effect. We'll be here on Wednesday talking all about that. So do not miss it. It's going to be another creepy, scary, superstitious, very strange show. So join us then. Mandela Effect. Until then, enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Don't drive drunk. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah!